Hello, welcome back to Back in My Play. This is episode number 24. This episode, we're going to be talking about Yoshi's Island, or also known as Super Mario World 2 in the United States. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me this week, first off, is a very special guest, the news editor from GiantBomb.com, Patrick Klepek. Patrick, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. So before we get to Josh, obviously, we had to get you on because you've been a big defender of this game on the internet. So I think you're going to be the perfect guest to have on for this video game.
Absolutely. It's definitely a game that draws out some opinions from people, for sure.
And the laughter that you also hear on your headphones is Joshua Hillier. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I've been on a search recently with several people. I'm trying to find this mythical Yoshi's Island. And so far, we found the island from Lost, but we haven't quite figured out Yoshi's Island. So if any readers or listeners find out about it, please tweet me at Joshua Hillier as I search for this island.
I forgot to warn you about that, Patrick. That's how Josh starts every episode, a little something, something. But let's...
Always true, by the way.
Hey, I'll take any Lost reference that I can get.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Lost is good stuff, isn't it?
Oh, it's terrific. One of my favorite shows.
Right on, man.
Available now on Netflix. We're going to take a quick break so we can put in a ton of music from Yoshi's Island. There's some great stuff in there. So stick around. We'll be right back with History of Yoshi's Island. All right, so Yoshi's Island has a really interesting history. We'll start off with the release dates. It came out in Japan and America pretty close, August 15th in Japan, 1995, and October 4th, 1995 in America. It was developed by Nintendo EAD with the usual suspects, producer Shigeru Miyamoto and composer Koji Kondo. The development of this game is particularly interesting because at the time, this is a very well-known story, but the guys that were making this game were kind of pressured to do something that would go up against Donkey Kong Country because that was very popular and it was a huge success for Nintendo. It supported pre-rendered graphics and, like I said, Nintendo kind of ordered the game's producer Shigeru Miyamoto to move the visuals in that direction, but instead he altered the graphics to look more like they were drawn with crayons, felt pens, making them look more cartoonish and resembled. Resubmitted it to evaluation committee and passed. Who passed the game said it was good to go.
How cool is that?
That he just said, "No, I'm going to make it my way."
Yeah, he said, "Look at this pre-rendered Donkey Kong Country nonsense, and like 20 years later, it's not going to look good, but we're going to make a game that looks timeless because Shigeru Miyamoto."
That's like that he still had to go to, you know, an approval committee. You know, This is fairly late in, you know, it's not quite Ocarina of Time, but obviously Miyamoto has proved himself many times over, and yet he's not just getting carte blanche.
I know. How crazy is that?
It's got to be a Japan thing.
It must be. And I think that's interesting. You know, it probably, you know, I guess I can't quite say whether that's a good or a bad thing, but it's certainly, I don't think you would see something similar with a designer that has that sort of success in the Western world, you know, the Ken Levines and what have you, where they sort of just, you know, they get time and money and do what they want. Doesn't always turn out well as a result of that. But I think it's an interesting note just in terms of hierarchy that they ask him still to do that.
Yeah, business practices in the East versus the West. And, you know, I wonder how similar that is now for Nintendo. If a senior producer like Miyamoto, you know, someone who has another 15 years or more since then, perhaps he does have that say-so to go make Wii music and whatever else he wants to make.
Yeah, you kind of get the sense these days that maybe he has become that committee, you know, the kind of the way he talks about it, you know, trying to train the employees beneath him to, you know, it's what always gets him into trouble when he talks about retirement. Because that's going to directly influence Nintendo's stock if he talks about that. But obviously, you know, he's a guy that, you know, considers what the future has to hold. And it sort of seems like these days he probably doesn't need the approval. It's, you know, he's become the guy that has to give it.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. Yeah, he's not as hands-on, but is more in that decision-making role instead.
This game made use of the Super FX 2 chip. You might remember the Super FX chip being a big part in great games like Star Fox. And there was that awesome dirt racing game as well. I think it was Stunt Race FX was another one, or it might have been the same one. But anyways.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing.
Several of Yoshi's moves that debuted in Super Mario World 2 also appeared in later games. So we got to see like the butt stomping, and then that also included the egg throwing, the flutter kick that Yoshi used in later games, including Super Mario Galaxy 2. So the game was really well received. It got lots of best of awards in multiple magazines. EGM gave Yoshi's Island its award for best action game in 1995. GamePro, unfortunately, did not give it the 5.0. I always like to mention GamePro because I love their rating system in terms of exploding face gestures and things like that. But they did not get the 5.0 scale. Another interesting thing of note is that when this game came out in 1995, Nintendo was doing some really weird things when it came to advertising their games. If you ever looked in Nintendo Power around this time, you even for advertising Nintendo Power, they used like weird meatloaf, like gross meatloaf ads and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Just things that were gross. I don't know if they thought kids wanted to see things like that, but there's a commercial that they used in North America where it is just kind of a fat guy stuffing his face constantly, showing that this game has so much content where he keeps stuffing his face until he actually explodes onto the rest of the people in the restaurant. So I'll make sure to link to that in the show notes. But
yeah, like that's just the whole extreme culture of the mid-90s.
It wasn't even extreme. It was just
there. I don't know.
It's like Earthbound when you would scratch and sniff those super gross things in Nintendo Power.
I remember that.
It was all that stuff.
It gets a reaction, I suppose.
Just look up like old late or mid-90s Nintendo ads. Even some of the stuff for N64 is just really weird. The game was also ported to the Game Boy Advance in 2006 as Super Mario Advance 3 Yoshi's Island. It is worth noting, one of the big things that people complain about with that game is that the sound isn't as good as the Super Nintendo version, but the game is pretty much there. And that was also just released on the Wii U Virtual Console just about a week ago. So you can get it on there if you don't have a GBA or a Super Nintendo available.
Yeah, Bill Trennan, actually, shout out to him, heard about this episode and went ahead and put it up there. So I appreciate that.
He's good like that. He's always on the Twitter. He's a good viewer of social networks. So I think that's it. We're gonna take another quick break so you can hear yet more Yoshi's Island music. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Now we're transporting back to 1995, where the Super Nintendo was just kind of on its last legs, and we started hearing things about the Nintendo Ultra 64. It's coming out soon. There's already arcade machines using the very hardware. Yeah, right. But Yoshi's Island was a late release on the Super Nintendo. If you're looking versus Super Mario World, we're talking 4 years later on the very same console. So we got to get two great Super Mario Brothers games, technically, depending on how you look at it and depending on what region you're in. But I want to throw it off to you, Patrick, first, because you're our special guest. What are your early memories of Yoshi's Island? What were the first times that you heard about it? And, you know, what were your thoughts when you played it back in the day?
So when this came out in 95, so I was 10 at the time. So I was relatively young. And so when I played it, the reason I played it was probably, you know, the reason Nintendo titled the game the way they did by calling it Super Mario World 2. So, you know, you invoke the name Super Mario World, and even my 10-year-old self is going to perk up and want to play the sequel to that, which I think in retrospect actually does a great disservice to the game. I think it actually sort of taints and weirds its legacy in strange ways for people that really did want a Super Mario World 2 of what you would expect from a traditional sequel. And that, you know, they added they named it as such for marketing reasons, which got someone like me into it, probably to play the game and probably wouldn't have otherwise. But I think in retrospect, you know, people think of it as, oh, it's, you know, it's not the sequel to Super Mario World that I wanted, which is totally true and valid, except that, you know, Yoshi's Island is its own amazing, unique beast that is part of why I fell in love with it originally. And, you know, I was not someone that hunted down all of the secrets. That was just, I wasn't skilled enough at 10 years old, and I'm not skilled enough at 29 years old either. So not much has changed. It's one of those games that I've grown to appreciate
it's a really difficult game.
As the years have gone on, especially frankly, when Nintendo has tried to go back to it. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, you're right, though, that it is just, there's a lot to it. And I don't know if I realized that when I think, Patrick, I think you and I are the same age pretty much. So I don't think I realized any of that at the time either.
Yeah, Kevin? It's a game that has definitely, as I've gone, you know, seen Nintendo try to return to it, seen Nintendo try to capture that magic a second or third time and really fail to do so basically every attempt, even their most recent one on the 3DS. I think it just goes to show how much of that game was maybe just a product of its time, and maybe the fact that it was created partially as a pushback to, you know, a move like Donkey Kong Country is why Nintendo has not been able to just make something as strange and fun and eccentric as the original Yoshi's Island.
For those listening out on the internet, we might have some overlapping of talking because Comcast is not really pulling their weight today with the internet, it seems. But so keep that in mind. It seems like we got all that stuff straightened out now, though.
Yeah.
You know, for me personally, when this game came out, I still was getting my Nintendo Power and I saw that it was coming, but I was still, unfortunately, going off of this past episode talking about Sonic 1 and 2 in 1995. That's when I got my Genesis. So I was kind of on a Genesis track because I only had limited funds. And if I had any money, it was going towards a Sega Genesis game because I had lots of stuff to catch up on. And as we got towards the end of 1995, that's when you started getting the issues in Nintendo Power with the like secret reveals of the Nintendo Ultra 64 hardware, where you knew that all these great games were going to be coming out real soon. And if, you know, I really wanted it, I couldn't just keep telling my parents, yeah, I would really want to get a new Super Nintendo game now, because again, limited funds, we didn't have a lot of money growing up. So if I really wanted that N64 at launch, I was going to have to really pick and choose my the places where I asked for stuff. So along with that, I got to see Killer Instinct and Cruisin' USA in the arcade, and I thought that's what we were going to get with the Nintendo 64. Unfortunately, it wasn't as good, but It was good enough to say, all right, I should just start saving my money. I should start tell my parents, all right, I don't want anything else, just this NU64 thing that's coming out. I really need to get that.
I understand that mentality. It was a very transitional period. From 95 to 96. And, you know, the PS1 had just come out in 94. Yeah. So, I mean, it was sort of a weird period of time.
How about you, Josh? Did you ever get to play this when it was new?
Oh yeah, man. Day one.
Really?
Day one, Yoshi's Island. Yeah. I've always been such a big Nintendo fan. And any mainline Mario platformer, which I guess there is an argument as to whether this is a mainline Mario platformer, but I considered it to be. It was even called Super Mario World 2. Got my attention, and so I knew it was coming out from reading magazines, looking at ads, and pre-ordered it at a time when pre-ordering wasn't as easy to do as it is today. Yeah, got it day one, played the heck out of it, loved it, and I didn't really play it to get a good grade on every level, though, you know, with the traditional American grade scale of 100 to 0 that it employs. I just was sort of playing it like a platformer just to get through it. And a big part of the game is trying to get everything. And replaying it this past week, that's been something that I've put a lot more emphasis on. But I liked it. I always liked Yoshi from Mario World. I thought he was a great addition to the Mario universe. And so I was excited to play as him a little bit more. I will say one thing as so I was either 10 or 11 when it came out. I don't remember precisely how old I was the day it came out. But anyway, I thought that the baby Mario, I was sort of at that age where I was trying to determine what was cool and what was kiddie, which is sad that I did that whole thing. But, you know, you do it when you're a preteen or a young teen. And I determined that Baby Mario was a little kiddie. And so that was the only thing I didn't like about the game. I loved Yoshi. I loved the art style. But I didn't like Baby Mario. Now I'm cool with him.
Patrick, were you able to make it all the way through the game back then?
I have no clue. I could not tell you. Those memories are lost to time.
I'll say that you did, Patrick, for your credit.
Yeah, let's say that I 100% of the game at 10 years old. I feel like if I'm going to make up memories, then that I might as well make up the best possible ones that I can do. No, I mean, I definitely played a significant chunk of it, and I have to imagine I finished it because, you know, I think like a lot of kids, I didn't get access to a lot of new games. So, you know, when you got to pick one, you know, whether that was part of Christmas or, you know, it's like, all right, you get to pick one new game this year or every couple of months, you know, you played those games into the ground. So I suspect that I did finish it, but the visual arts style for the game is kind of what stuck with me for the longest time. Even, you know, when I went years and years and years before playing it again, I think I didn't return to it until the GBA version actually came out. But it's one of those styles that just, you know, you can see other games try and go for something similar. And even when other Yoshi-related games have gone for something similar, like the new 3DS one, there's just something about it. Like, it is wholly its own, and it really sticks with you, I guess, whether you like it or not. Even the folks that don't particularly care for Yoshi's Island. And I don't blame people for disliking the crying Mario. It is annoying, but you're only hearing the crying Mario if you're screwing up. So, you know, I tend to think bad players of video games are the only ones that don't like Yoshi's Island.
Mm-hmm. So in a roundabout way, Jeff Gerstmann is a bad video gamer.
You know, I didn't say that, but, you know, you're free to infer whatever you like from my comments.
Okay, yeah.
I don't think he's saying Jeff. I think he's saying anyone that doesn't like Yoshi's Island is bad at video games.
Or just bad. Just bad.
I think it's bad people. Bad.
There are just some wrong opinions that exist, and that's one of them.
Mm-hmm. That good people. These are good people who have these bad opinions in some cases.
Yeah, you know, people aren't perfect. People aren't perfect.
Right.
I'll be real. I'm going to be honest. This game totally missed me, but I picked it up a little bit when Super Nintendo emulation became a thing when I was in high school. In one of the computer classes that we had when I was supposed to be learning C++, I think, I was playing Super Nintendo games on the computer, and I just never got it. I never got the hook of Yoshi's.
That's not a good way to play the game, though, either.
I know, but I'm just saying, even then, I didn't see enough where I need to go to the local Funko Land and pick up a copy of this game because I'm clearly missing out on a gem. You'll see that has changed a little bit since I've played it recently. But for 1995, or even that was probably 2001, I still was not really grabbing it. Might have been the look of it, the kiddie look of it. And at the time, I just wanted to play Duke Nukem 3D. You know, that's what I wanted to play as an 11-year-old.
Oh, I don't blame you. Like, being able to sneak Duke Nukem 3D into my rotation was like one of my proudest moments, when I was like, oh, I can hit space and like there are strippers. Like, my parents don't know what's going on.
Shake it, baby.
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, you know, even in talking about the development struggle or process for Yoshi's Island, you see that tension where even Nintendo itself, you know, is drawn to, you know, I don't think Donkey Kong Country is a bad game. And I was deeply in love with it at the time. I think the thing that stands the test of time for that game is the music, more than anything. But, you know, that game was incredibly popular at a time that the Super Nintendo should have been a dead machine. So you can't really blame Nintendo for wanting to go down that path. But man, I mean, imagine, you can kind of see what that game might have sort of looked like, because they kind of went down that path with Yoshi's Story on the N64, which had, you know, pre-rendered characters. And that game looks like garbage.
And it looked like garbage the day it came out. Like, it looked like garbage then, and it looks even worse now.
Yeah, now it's just like garbage with Vaseline smeared all over the screen. That game, I did not like that game very much. I played Yoshi's Story, too, because I loved Yoshi's Island. Also, there just were like zero N64 games to play for long stretches of time. So anything that came out, I was going to Blockbuster to rent it. Oh, I did not like Yoshi's Story. That is,
I know. The singing is charming, but that's about it. That game is, it is not fun. Patrick, what about Baby Mario crying? How did you feel about that as a kid?
It didn't bother me. I think it's an interesting game mechanic. I think the idea that, there's no way they couldn't have known it was annoying, right? Like, it's purposely there to bug the player, to create an incentive to be more skilled. And, you know, that's kind of what is a lot about Yoshi's Island, especially when you watch, you know, like these days, like Twitch streams of really highly skilled players playing a game like Yoshi's Island. You discover just the amount of thought put into every part of the level design that, you know, I think we were talking about before. It sounds like most of us kind of played the game, you know, like a standard platformer, just go from left to right, get to the exit, collect what you can along the way. When that's a valid way to play the game, and it's still kind of the way I played the game, but when you start to see high-level play of Yoshi's Island, realize just how much depth there is to that game. You know, it really does feel like every single element of Yoshi's Island, including the annoying crying baby Mario, was put there for a reason, and is a very thoughtful reason. Even if, when you get hit, it's totally annoying. I'm not going to say it isn't.
All right. Well, I think that's it for 1995. We're going to jump in the time machine and go back to present day for a look at revisiting Yoshi's Island with some fresh eyes. So stick around. We'll be right back with that. Okay, we're back to revisit Yoshi's Island with some fresh eyes. It was really interesting. I know, Patrick, recently you did a video on GiantBomb.com, kind of going through the game and giving some fresh impressions of it. So what was it like revisiting the game so many years, almost 20 years later?
It's actually amazing how well it holds up. I mean, that's always the problem with going back to some of these older games, right, is where you... you revisit them and you have these fond memories, and then sometimes you shouldn't go back and play those old games because they're better off in your memories. Either the mechanics, you know, maybe weren't that good to begin with, but you just convinced yourself they were good because you didn't have anything else to play, or you know, games are a process of iteration for a huge part of game design, and it's natural in video games, unlike some other mediums, for newer games to kind of just be better as we've learned more how to make better games. But Yoshi's Island, it holds up tremendously well. You know, certainly you have, you know, all sorts of things that go through your head when you play an older game. It's like, oh my God, I would love to, you know, see an update of this game in widescreen and play it on my big 60-inch TV. But everything about the way it plays, I think, holds up fundamentally really, really well. I think in retrospect, it remains, you know, an excellent platformer with a lot of heart and a lot of depth and a lot of fun. And I think it's a game that we've only come to appreciate more, as I was mentioning earlier, when we've been able to watch people who really learn to master the game, that really shows off the depth that the designers put into, you know, every element of the game.
Are you referencing like speed runs and things like that?
Yeah, TriHax is the one I think is probably the most widely known speedrun Yoshi's Island player. And I would highly recommend anyone go and check any of his runs, because he has played it so much, and like a lot of these speedrunners, is able to articulate his process as he's playing because so much of it has become automatic. And when he's playing this game, not only is he beating the game in just a couple of hours, he's getting every single pickup in the game, which I could spend weeks and I probably wouldn't be able to do that. And yet he's able to do that because he has mastered the game to such a degree. And it just, you know, the weird things you can do with the egg shooting, stuff that has nothing to do with accomplishing the main objectives in front of you, but allows him as a high level player to play the game in a fundamentally different way. It's just extremely impressive and only makes to have me better appreciate the game as a whole.
I should have asked you in the last segment, but was the game originally really frustrating for you? Did you have any like controller throwing moments? It seems to be obviously a difficult game, but were you able to kind of keep your composure when you were playing it? Again, I know it's kind of looking back 20 years
ago. You know, I don't think Yoshi's Island was one of the games where I broke a controller. That was, for me, usually Street Fighter or Bomberman was the two games where I distinctly, my friend's parents, they lived down the street for me. And, you know, when I'd get knocked out in an early round of Bomberman or lost a Street Fighter, that's usually when the controller went flying. I don't think I actually broke one, but I sure as hell came awful close. I think I managed to make it through Yoshi's Island without breaking a controller. But it also could be that I just completely blocked it out of my memory.
Yeah, Nintendo's really known for their quality hardware, so it might have just been a case like of the Game Boys. Like, you can bring that to Desert Storm and be good to go. So it could be a case of that, too. Josh, how about for you? What was it like revisiting Yoshi's Island?
It's an even better game than I remember it being, quite frankly. The name of the game is Variety this time around. I didn't recognize just how many things you could do that I just had forgotten somehow over time. So all the different Yoshi power-ups, those bubbles that you'll pick up periodically that'll turn Yoshi into a helicopter or into a sort of drill-like creature, like what you see in Drill Dozer, for instance. And then levels that are scrolling the whole time and you're trying to move really quickly through them, or versus levels that have really tight platforming, versus levels that have things that are hard to pick up, or you have to shoot things perfectly in order to get them. Just what a great game in terms of, you know, the commercial with the man exploding because of how much content there is. That's, although a ridiculous commercial, it's pretty realistic for the type of game that we got here. So the art style's more beautiful than I remember it being. There's a little bit more charm than I remember. I didn't notice little quirks like in the animation when you're running really quickly, Baby Mario's hat will bounce up and down. Just oozing with Nintendo charm.
They were seriously pushing that hardware, huh? Even with the extra chips built into the cartridge, they were squeezing every last bit of juice out of that Super Nintendo.
It seems like it. It really does. And you know, we've talked about this a little bit so far already, but I think that it's one of the, I think it's the most impressive game on the hardware. Just art style and animation and everything else. I just, because some of the other games that were really impressive at the time aren't that impressive today. Like the Stunt Race FX game, you know, has a really bad frame rate, even though the art styles, even though it's interesting, they were able to pull off that polygonal 3D and whatnot. It doesn't hold up as well as what you see with Yoshi's Island today. And it made me, Patrick, you'll appreciate this, almost want to go play the new 3DS Yoshi's Island.
Don't.
Yeah. I heard you talk about it on your morning show that you and that's Drew,
Alex,
right?
Navarro.
Alex, thank you. Sorry. The Wolf is all I could remember.
Yeah, that's amazing to be his real name.
The Wolf that you guys host together. Anyway, yeah, it wasn't really a ringing endorsement that you offered for it.
No, it's playing something like the new Yoshi's Island really puts, like, if you want to better appreciate Yoshi's Island and you feel like you've wrung all you can out of playing the original game, go and play something like the new 3DS one. You know, it wasn't made by Nintendo. It was made by, like, reform members of ArtToon, I believe,
right.
Who does not have, let's say, a stellar legacy of terrific games to begin with. And it's part of what's made me frustrated about how Nintendo itself has treated the legacy of Yoshi's Island. It's a fantastic game that they kind of drag out every once in a while to produce a new entry, but they don't put their A-teams on it. Like, they...
Right.
I don't recall who the actual developer was on the 3DS one, but, you know, it's not like we're getting EAD or someone assigned in there to work on this. They're basically just kind of shoveling out another Yoshi's Island to capitalize on the nostalgia that a certain segment of their fan base has. And it's just a bummer, because I just assume they don't make another one if they're not going to give it their all, because, you know, I don't think newer games that aren't very good necessarily, you know, ruin anything about what makes Yoshi's Island special, but it's just unfortunate because it puts into such a stark contrast just how good Yoshi's Island is when you see another developer that either doesn't get it or isn't capable of creating something on that level tries their hand at it, and it's just wildly disappointing.
You mentioned a couple times, you know, you mentioned Yoshi's Story, the DS version, and now the 3DS version, where they've tried to continue the series. Can you put your finger on what makes them not good?
They feel like pale imitations. Often it feels that they're just grasping at, like, they looked at Yoshi's Island and said, all right, what do we need? I should say I didn't play the DS version. I've actually heard that some people kind of like that one, so I don't really have an opinion on the DS one way or the other, but I've played all the other ones, and it often feels like in the 3DS one is especially guilty of this. They just looked at Yoshi's Island and said, oh, what does a Yoshi's Island game need? And then just kind of threw those in a blender and spit it out, as opposed to really understanding why those mechanics are there in Yoshi's Island, why they were specifically built for the game they wanted to make. It really does feel like a poor expansion pack or something like that. It just, you know, the visual style, the gameplay, every little element of it just feels like they're ticking a box. And that's what almost makes it come across as insulting, because it's not even that it's a bad game, but it's just so profoundly disappointing compared to what came before it and the lack of understanding of what made the original work.
Yeah, it's sort of the cover band phenomenon.
Totally.
You know, of just bringing uninspired sort of a version of whatever this thing was that was once great before, to where you're just listening to a bunch of roofers play 8675309.
and it makes me wonder if Nintendo themselves maybe does not understand exactly what people love about the game so much. Like, is it necessarily that, you know, the cynical attitude would just be like, kind of what I expressed of the old, they're just going to trot out a new one every once in a while just to trot out a new one? Or is it the fact that every game they've made since, which has not been nearly as good as the original, does that maybe have something to do with what we love about Yoshi's Island not being what Nintendo understands us to love about Yoshi's Island. So when they go back to recapture it or to try and build on it, it never quite works out because maybe they just don't quite get what the fans took away from it as much. And, you know, I would love to see Nintendo give Yoshi's Island away to some indie developer that loves Nintendo games. Like, let them go and do something with it, because at this point, it really feels like Nintendo doesn't know what to do with Yoshi and the legacy of Yoshi's Island. So why not give someone else a shot instead of kind of giving it to the C team that just doesn't seem to quite grasp what makes it work?
That's right. Yeah, I think it either needs to be handed off to a really creative indie team, like what you're talking about, or just don't bother anymore, because there's plenty of creative ideas, and, you know, because they're doing a new Yoshi's game in the style of Kirby's Epic Yarn later this year, or next year sometime. I mean, you know, just try other new things then, and just maybe accept that, well, that was a really great game, and we can't really make it quite the same, and that's okay. So we'll just do other things with this character. And that, and you know, there's no shame in that, because I think that the sales of this latest Yoshi's Island game might have made that happen already. I don't think it's done all that well, from what I understand.
No, it kind of came and went, and I think the reviews, you know, anyone that was even on the fence, the reviews probably buried people on checking that game out before there's some sort of significant eShop sale or something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty bad that when I don't buy a new Nintendo first-party game, that's a bad sign.
Well, I don't know if you guys are going to really hold out hope. Nintendo's not really great with their third-party relations these days, or the indie stuff seems to be a little shaky, but hopefully they will open up soon and Yoshi will get some new life.
Give it to Platinum Games.
Yeah.
Anything that Platinum wants to make, I'll play it. Those guys are profound. But like, I think about, you know, if people like Edmund McMillan and, you know, like the developers of Super Meat Boy, like, what if they made a new Yoshi's Island game? Maybe they don't want to make it. Maybe that's not the team to assign it to. But I look at what those guys are doing. It's like, those guys have the passion. Those guys, people like them would understand what would make a new one tick in 2014. You know, you look at like what the developers of Hyper Light Drifter are doing, you know, a game that channels a lot of what we love about classic SNES Zelda or Secret of Mana, like games like that. And they're doing, you know, it in their own universe and their own take on it. But it's stuff like that. Like, I would love to see more developers who still have a deep nostalgia for Nintendo franchises. Give them a shot. Like, what's the harm? Like, Nintendo, I think, sometimes plays it way too safe and to their own detriment with some of their franchises, which, you know, is to their credit that they don't exploit them nearly as much as they probably could. Mm-hmm. But I think they could afford to take a few more risks, and I think it would probably really pay off.
And they have better relationships with indie developers than ever before, it seems.
There was an interesting article a couple of days ago, I think.
About Adelman?
Gamma Sutra, yeah.
Yeah, there was the Gamma Sutra piece by Brandon Sheffield, who he had been doing a series of, you know, what he admitted were sort of puff pieces with the various independent relationship heads at various at the hardware manufacturers. And Nintendo passed on it, and he wrote a pretty scathing takedown of how that better represents Nintendo's general relationship with independent developers. And then that's unfortunate, because I think, even given all that, almost anyone, if approached by Nintendo and they were told, "Hey, you want to make a Kirby game?" Like, how many people would say no to that?
Yeah, I can't imagine many.
And they would bring such a passion to it that I think sometimes Nintendo, you know, when they try to balance the new with the old and then bringing back, you know, stuff that people loved and trying to bring a new version of that for the future, I think just they don't always have it or know what to do with it. And if they were just a little more open with their franchises, even if it's the bottom of the barrel ones, I don't know. Like, I think there could be an opportunity there that they just maybe don't see because of their culture of sort of being very close to the chest.
Well, and there are some indie developers that are already almost exclusive to Nintendo, and they make high-quality stuff, like Yacht Club Games, the people who are putting out Shovel Knight next month, sometime in May, that's releasing. That's only on PC and the Nintendo platforms. Mm-hmm. That's not coming out on PS4 and Vita and 360 and everywhere else. You know, you can just imagine that they would be stoked to work on something on an actual Nintendo IP with with that dedication to Nintendo already. Who knows? Maybe it's in the works, but I doubt it.
Yeah, I unfortunately choose to be pessimistic, but it is one of those things that I think could go a long way towards endearing the very developers that Nintendo needs in order to, you know, fill their platforms with games when, you know, they're just not a big enough company to make enough games to justify the purchase of a hardware platform for a lot of people. You know, I'm happy buying Nintendo games or Nintendo machines for Nintendo games, but that's not everyone, and a lot of people have to be way more cautious with what they spend their money on.
This is true.
We totally okay. I'm gonna bring it back to Yoshi's Island real quick.
Because, yeah,
I was really interested. I planned to really sit back for this segment to hear what you guys had to say, because I have played a crap ton of this game in the past week. I probably played like 8 hours. And first off, it was really interesting streaming it on Twitch and getting feedback from people that have played this game over and over and over again and discovering things for the first time and having people say, oh yeah, just wait until you get to world 4, wait till you get to world 5 and things like that. I got a real almost current Nintendo vibe where if you guys remember like Super Mario 3D World, where not one of the complaints, but even one of the things that I said when talking about it is that you really have to get through the first half of the game. Then the second half is just a bunch of crazy shit. Like they just are so imaginative and they're throwing just so many new innovations into what you can do on a 3D platformer that you're constantly surprised from stage to stage. And for me, everything after World 2 was brand new. So I got so many things. Like I couldn't believe like this was first off on a Super Nintendo console, just in terms of the visuals. You guys mentioned that it looked great, but things that really stood out to me were like rays of sunshine that would kind of come through the trees in some of the forest stages, the reflections in the underground stages, just being blown away by variety in the stages, and that the levels are super long. They're gigantic, and it was almost to a detriment where I would get 3/4 way through the stage, and this would be, you know, 5 or 6 minutes because I'm trying to collect some stuff. I'm constantly looking for coins because, for me, this game was super hard. I found it to be, like, brutally hard.
Yeah, after the first world, even.
Oh, yeah, but in the third, in the fifth world, I almost gave up because I just felt like it was almost unfair. I felt like I had good use of the controls and the mechanics. I had that down. I understood how to play the game, but constantly it was throwing new things at me. Maybe the checkpoints could have been in better places. Maybe there could have been more checkpoints. And then I just started thinking, maybe it's just that the new Super Mario, like the quote, new Super Mario Brothers games are just so friggin' easy.
I think that you're probably right that it's more that the newer Mario 2D games have been a little bit easy, quite frankly, unless you're trying to collect everything, which then if you're trying to get the 3 gold coins in those games, that's a nice challenge.
Well, I'm just saying like game overs. Like I've probably had 30 game overs while playing this game because I did not have enough 1-ups where like in New Super Mario Brothers 2, I had like 60 lives by the time I got to World 8. So
yeah.
I don't know. Again, I think you guys are really lucky to have gotten to play this back in 1995. and I feel like I missed out a lot on being able to play this. But it still looks – this is my advertising segment where I'm going to say the XRGB Framemeister, having a Super Nintendo hooked up to that with an RGB cable to my 55-inch TV, this game still looks beautiful. Like it's – unbelievably good looking, even on a 55-inch TV. I'm going to be interested to see how it looks on the GBA version looks on a Wii U, going through a Wii U to a big TV. But while it was super frustrating, I was constantly just like, aw, like it's just like a really cute game. It's a really endearing game. But
how'd you like the shooting mechanic, Kevin?
Like shooting the eggs?
Uh huh.
Oh, it, I think like after the third world, I had it down. Like I was just running through stages, like constantly lining stuff up. I didn't really use the LNR a lot, but I mean, really the only thing that bugged me about the game was, like you guys said, Mario crying and the stages where you had the like those little fuzzy things that would cause you to like hallucinate.
Yeah, touch fuzzy, get dizzy.
That's right.
Okay.
Take Ambien, get crazy.
Yeah, but
I
couldn't, the controls were almost impossible. Like I don't know if that's a like a fondly looked back on mechanic of that game, but every time I saw a stage with those in, I was like, crap, like this is gonna suck because you just lose control.
It's just such a strange way to play a platformer too. Mm-hmm. Even in 2014, where the platformer has been done seemingly in every way possible and deconstructed and mm-hmm. turned into a meta commentary on itself, and if you're talking about games like Braid, and yet still Yoshi's Island stands as incredibly unique and just mechanically complex. Like the sure. idea that you're still jumping from platform to platform while you're shooting this egg, which is like going, like the aimer is like going all, it's very fast, it's hard to line up, especially in the later stages where you really need to start using it to do enemy control mm-hmm. just to get through the stages that you're in. It's a lot of counterintuitive gameplay mechanics that have been kind of smashed together where it shouldn't work, but it works really, really well. And because they feel counterintuitive, I think it layers on an additional set of challenges that you don't normally get in a game when you're, you know, kind of explicitly focused on just jumping from one thing to the next.
Did you guys, the last thing I wanted to mention was the, when you lose Mario, of course he's crying, but there are certain parts in the game, especially in stages where there's water, where you can kind of get stuck in the water. And those were the times where I felt like this is unfair. Like I can't get back to Mario. He's floating away from me. And that's when the controllers started getting thrown in my house because it just felt that was the only part, the mechanic that I didn't really like. I probably would have rather, I mean, it wouldn't have been as new and different, but I would have rather had like a, almost like a Super Mario Brothers 2 mechanic where you had just like life instead of having to constantly chase him down, because in those later worlds, there's lots of pits. There's lots of things that will constantly, you know, you'll get rebounded back and forth off of that will just be like, I can't do anything. Like this is out of my control. There's no way I can track him down. I hate this game, but it's still great.
Patrick, why don't you take this first?
It's weird. It's such a, the challenge of it is, I'm sorry, I completely lost my train of thought.
That's okay, man.
So why don't you take it and then I'll take it from there.
Okay, fuzzy stuff, man.
Did you touch a fuzzy?
I might have. I think I might have touched a fuzzy and got dizzy. That's what happens. I was supposed to do a lot of drugs before we did this podcast, right? Like that was part of the agreement.
That's right.
That was in the outline, yeah.
Okay.
Forgot? Or you did? You did or you didn't? Okay, never mind.
We're not talking about it.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, yeah, that's probably one of the few parts of the game that isn't balanced all that well, Kevin, just to be completely honest. I mean, at the same time, you could probably make the argument that, well, this is late in the game. It should be hard. But at the same time, that's probably the one part. I think you even used the word unfair. That's probably the one part of the game that is a bit unfair. But still, you know, I don't think it makes it a bad game or anything. It's not.
Okay.
Yeah, but I agree with you that it might be a little bit too much at that point in terms of, you know, like the later levels in Super Meat Boy or something where, you know, you've certainly worked hard to get there, but perhaps it's a little bit too much at that point.
Patrick, are you a fan of Super Mario Brothers 2 on the Nintendo Entertainment System?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay.
In fact, and partially just because it's so different. Like, I'm a huge fan of when games take giant mechanical leaps in a different direction. You know, one of the greatest parts of games is that they can iterate from one to the next and improve on what was the foundation of the previous one. But I love it when games series take a left turn. And Yoshi's Island, if looked in the context of Super Mario World 2, is certainly, you know, an instance of that specific split of the Mario franchise taking a really interesting left turn. And I think Mario 2, you know, is in that spirit of just really flipping what you expect from the series on its head while, you know, retaining a lot of what you love on at a base level, but just doing something completely different with it.
Well, Josh, and I know you feel pretty similar to that. That was my theory going into this, is that if you are a big fan of Super Mario Brothers 2, which I think I like it. I mean, it's pretty good, but I figured if you like Super Mario Brothers 2, you're a little bit more inclined to like Yoshi's Island, not just because it is a game where it has a really interesting spin on the mechanics of a popular franchise, depending on what region you're in. But at the same time, they reuse like a lot of stuff from Super Mario Brothers 2. Weird things like, well, obviously the enemies, like there's if you're playing through it, you're going to see Shy Guys, you're going to see Sniffits, but at the same time, sometimes you'll go down pipes and it will be like you're going down one of those, I guess it would be a pipe in Super Mario Brothers 2, where they'll just be like an kind of an open area. There might be an enemy at the bottom.
Sometimes that's like what's inside of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, to me, one of the things I just noticed, oh man, there's like a lot of callbacks to Super Mario Brothers 2 in this game. So I don't know if they linked any of that stuff in Japan or they had any thoughts to do that going in, but
that's a really good observation.
Just like I said, I played a crap ton of this game in the last 2 days to the point where, you know, it was weird too. While I was playing this, I did a interesting contrast where I just got a copy of Doom 64. I know this is a little bit off topic, but I've been playing Doom 64 at night, and every time, like, if you haven't played Doom 64, that game is scary. That game has great atmosphere and it is very scary, but I would have to take breaks from Doom 64 because there's no save anywhere, and sometimes I get frustrated, but also because it's really dark, it's really creepy, and this was the perfect, like, I don't know how you would put it. It's like a perfect just wash to get palate cleanser. Great palate cleanser to Doom 64. So I've been playing both these games side by side for the last 5 or 6 nights, and it's been a great contrast for each other. So I mentioned that if you're playing a scary game like Doom 64,
if you're playing Doom 64 right now, you know, as most people are.
That's our audience, man.
Our listeners might be, actually.
I remember Doom 64 having like really great lighting for that version of Doom, and they redid all the sprites, which I believe is unique to that version of the game relative to all other ports of Doom, because it's in some ways kind of a, I guess not a remake, but it's, they certainly went and updated. I remember the lighting being really good, the music being really good, and like the updated like pinky sprite just being terrifying for the time.
Yeah, it's Midway did a great job. I've been doing some research because I'm trying to think about how we can talk about it on the show. This worked out perfectly. But also, it has a very interesting history because John Carmack did a lot of overseeing on it, but it was completely developed by Midway, and it was developed as a completely different game before it was going to be Doom, or at least the engine that they were developing for, they were going to use for something else. But they're like, hey, let's make a Doom game, and they were going to call it something else. But they said, no, they won't understand that is in the Doom franchise. So, hey, it's a Nintendo 64 game. Let's call it Doom 64 because everyone else is doing it. But go pick it up. It's a relatively cheap game on eBay. You can get it for like $10 if you have an N64 hooked up somewhere.
I have it too, so we really should just do an episode.
Sure, yeah. Put it on the list. Anything else that you guys wanted to touch on before we move on? I think I got all that out of my system.
The baseball playing Shy Guys freak me out.
Oh, yeah. Tons of enemies, too.
Yeah.
And so many unique ones. Where that's the thing you realize pretty quickly when you play the game a second time and have a better sense of the game in totality, is that there's a lot of one-off content in Yoshi's story in a way that you just don't see in many games of that time, and especially of games today, where you try and reuse as much as you can because it's so expensive to build. But Yoshi's Island just has so much weird stuff that they only use once and never revisit. And I think that's also part of what makes the game so exciting to play, because every single stage, you have no idea what you're going to see next.
Yeah. That's where I was getting that Super Mario or 3D World vibe, that Galaxy 2 vibe from. I just felt there was one stage where you go in and just out of nowhere, a gigantic chop starts chasing you. Like it is, it's almost like that, you know, that scene in Castlevania Dracula X, where you have that gigantic monster chasing you, and you're just, it's a completely different, like, you didn't tell me to expect any of this and you're probably going to die, but eventually you'll get it down. And it is a great scene for at the end. You're just like, man, I can't believe that was awesome. It's a total Chris Farley, you know, man, that was awesome. Like I found myself saying a lot after I was completely frustrated. Once I did it, I just felt like that was great. I mean,
yeah, that's one of the better platforming levels.
Yeah. Josh,
I just want to say, for me, this is definitely one of the three. I don't like to do top five list all the time, but this really is one of the three best games on the Super Nintendo. So I'm really glad that we got to cover it.
Do you have the other two?
The original Star Fox would definitely be one, and Link to the Past.
Really?
Man, yep. Poor Chrono Trigger.
I know.
Poor Earthbound.
Every RPG.
Yeah, I didn't like RPGs when I was a kid. I do now, though, so it's kind of a tricky thing. I don't have the nostalgia for them like I do today.
Man, I don't know. Sunset Riders probably deserves a spot up there, but...
Nah.
Yeah, let's make a... Let's just do a top three episode for the rest of... No, I'm just kidding. All right, so let's let's take a quick break. We're going to be right back with some breaking news from New Mexico, so stick around. We're back for a very short final segment. Before we get into anything, I want to do a quick announcement that I do have some things confirmed for the next two episodes. First off, I got in contact with David Kushner, the author of Masters of Doom, among many other things. He's actually, you know, writing for other outlets and things like that now. But after finishing the book, this is a great thing about the internet. Just reached out to him from his website and said, hey, you know, would you mind talking about Masters of Doom for like an hour or so? I'm going to be jumping on the phone with him this upcoming week. So you can look for that interview next week. And continuing with our roundup of Player One people, Phil Theobald is going to be coming on to talk about Mega Man 3 after a very... big debate on the NES Music episode where I was very sure that Mega Man 3 has a better opening, you know, theme. So I'm sure we can open that back up in just a couple days. So that's what's going to be coming up, and you can keep up to date with all that stuff on @BackOfMyPlay on Twitter. But the breaking news, actually, this is going to be perfect. Patrick, you're the news guy, so I'm going to toss it off to you. What just happened?
Well, so Microsoft, they're trying to create a bunch of original content for Xbox Live. And as part of that, they were funding a documentary, I believe, by Zach Penn, who is a screenwriter who you might know. I think he wrote the first two X-Men films or was involved. He's been involved in a lot of superhero stuff, amongst other things. But they are doing a documentary on the E.T., the myth, which I guess now is no longer a myth, that Atari, after it was discovered that E.T. was a awful, horrible video game, thousands were dumped into the desert and just buried. And it's kind of always just been this urban myth that we talk about and whether it's true or not. And they actually went out with the crew, dug up, and just a couple of moments ago, we're getting photos from folks that are at the dig site, and they are finding copies of E.T., which is pretty damn cool.
And it's not only that, there looks like, again, Chris Kohler is a source for a lot of this stuff. He's saying they're actually finding sealed copies of Centipede and Missile Command.
Weird.
In there too. So it looks like it wasn't just, they weren't just dumping ET cards. They were just dumping a ton of 2600 cards. So as Josh mentioned a little bit off the air, Mike Micah is there. I don't know if he's like supervising the dig or something like that, but shout out to Mike. And that actually reminds me too, we're going to be doing part two of the port series with Mike. That's probably going to be next week too, but I'm going to try to space a lot of this stuff out so you guys don't get overwhelmed with retro game stuff. But
yeah, let me say also, with the throwback nature of this show, Mike Micah is throwing back to the 80s, and he is rocking Daisy Dukes on this dig, according to Twitter.
I can't wait to see pictures.
So yeah, this just in.
Yeah, this is... I don't know. It's a really interesting story and perfect for this, you know, podcast because, again,
it's fascinating.
It is. I can't, like I said, I was talking off the air, but I can't wait to see what they do with the video. I can't wait to see it. Hopefully it's not too much of a delay until we get to see the full documentary. But
I imagine the whole thing just being Green Day's Good Riddance time of your life while they just look at a bunch of cartridges thrown across the desert.
Well, I mean, they have the original developer of E.T. there. They have obviously they're going to be interviewing a lot of people from Atari and stuff like that. I just want to see. This is literally as we're recording. It's still developing, so people are posting pictures and they're still digging stuff up. But it looks like there is literally a ton of Atari cartridges that were buried in New Mexico landfill. So hopefully we'll have some more news on that at some point. But I think that is a perfect time to wrap up the podcast. First off, Patrick, thank you so much for taking the time, especially out of a Saturday, to come and talk about some Yoshi's Island. I really appreciate it.
Any time that I can spread the gospel of Yoshi's Island to dispel the heretics who do not, for some reason, like Yoshi's Island, I will take it.
Does Jeff know that you're doing this?
Oh, I don't need his approval. Nor does Yoshi's Island. Nor does Yoshi's Island.
It's amen. Well said.
They're like you said. They're bad people. It's a lost cause. You know, focus towards the future. Put this in the hands of the youth.
Exactly.
And, you know, maybe all 500 people that have a Wii U, download it on the console and give it to your kid and see what they think. And you can still go to eBay. You can pick this game up. It's super cheap. If you get the Super Famicom version, it's like 200 yen in Japan. It's not a really expensive cart. So clearly just book a trip to Japan, buy a copy, and then come back and do the right thing. So before we go, obviously you can check out Patrick's stuff on jivebomb.com. You can check him out on Twitter at Patrick Klepek. The Back in My Play podcast is available on iTunes. The best way you can support us right now is by going on iTunes and submitting a review and subscribing on iTunes. You can also find all the great Giant Bomb content up. I think there's like 5 different Giant Bomb podcasts that are up there, from the dump truck to
a lot of stuff.
The bomb, and there's the Nintendo Download Express if you want to get some Nintendo Download stuff from like 4 years ago or whatever it was. So
you want to be up to date.
It's still funny.
It's up to date if you have a Wii or a DSi.
DSi,
so,
yeah,
that's true.
Let me say this while we're plugging Patrick's stuff. Bomb in the AM, the morning show, Patrick. I really like it. That's probably my favorite thing you guys do.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know, Alex and I, being out of the San Francisco office, wanted to try and find a way to not only have a show that is at different points in the week, and that also there's a live show for people in the morning that don't necessarily get the time zones that other features on the site fall under. But yeah, we've really appreciated the feedback we've gotten. So it's awesome that you're enjoying it, and everyone else that does it. It means a lot.
They have developers on there periodically. It's cool. Very good stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it was Rami that was just on from Flam Beer last week. Fantastic interview. And I don't know if I told this story on the show, but I was actually like on a flight with him from Boston to Dublin. And I saw him as I was getting off the plane. And he's kind of a very distinctive looking dude with his facial hair and stuff like that. And then I get on Twitter while I'm at the baggage check, and unfortunately he was connecting to another flight. I'm like, I think I just saw Rami from Lambeer, and like 2 seconds later, he's like, dude, where are you? Like, where are you? Like, are you connecting to another flight? I'm like, no, unfortunately I'm staying in Dublin, which was still a pretty good deal. But
good dude.
Yeah, so check that stuff out on iTunes is a place where you can get podcasts, and there's other places as well, but that's the big one. We're also on like the Windows Phone podcast store now. So if you have one of those, you can listen to it, or at least search on there if you have one of those. And you can follow Josh on Twitter at Joshua Hillier, at Kevin Larrabee, and like I said, at Back in My Play. A great way to get in contact with us if you want to talk about retro game stuff. Finally, the last thing, I might be doing some more of the Google Hangout stuff for the one-on-one interviews. I was with Greg Stewart earlier in the week, just like randomly, to talk about Sonic the Hedgehog, because of course he's the perfect guy to talk about Sonic the Hedgehog with. And yeah, I think that's it. There's lots of cool stuff coming down the road. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing and doing all that stuff. back in my play.com. I think that's all the plugs. And again, Patrick,
that's
thank
a lot
you.
Of plugs.
Yeah. I guess I had too much caffeine. Man.
Plug.
Too much caffeine. I gotta get this out before I have to go to hospital. All right.
Touch fuzzy, get dizzy.
Maybe I need some fuzzy.
Yeah. I think that would probably counterbalance the caffeine at this point.
Come back down a little bit.
Yeah.
So thank you, everyone. Enjoy the week. We'll be back next time with some more old video games. Take care.